As some of you know, I have a new golden retriever puppy. His name is Lenny. He's 4.5 months old, and he is really beautiful. People stop their cars and get out to meet my dog. It's really interesting. Among the most important factors in having a new puppy for me is that my daily presence at the dog park, twice a day, has returned. When my dog Libby died in December, part of my grief was that my community of the dog park was not as accessible. The dog park has long been my parish, or should I say that I have some of the most deeply philosophical, religious, spiritual, political, emotional conversations of my life. I told some of my favorites there that I was planning to preach on the subject of happiness today. And so I asked them, what do you think the preamble to the Declaration of Independence means? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There was a great deal of laughter with this question, and the absurdity swung from happiness is having the perfect lover to having enough money to travel as much as desired. And also in there was happiness is transcendence and enlightenment. And as is true of everything these days, it got political. And I needn't go on with that. But it is the pursuit of happiness, I interjected, the pursuit of a God-given right. That seemed to stop the conversation, except with my friend Joe, who said, I think it means that we have the right to try to find out what makes us happy without interference of the state. I thought that was brilliant. What does the phrase, the pursuit of happiness, mean? In the most elemental document of our history, it was fun to look around, and as usual, I spent a good deal of this week on the internet, being reminded that the pursuit is the God-given right, not something that a human can give us or take away from us. It is a moral, ethical, a legal principle, which is an underlying cause of truth, justice, morality, and ethics. Just like life and liberty, the pursuit is a right. Not something to be voted on, but a right. An inherent fact of God's relationship to us. Something that God gives us. Let me remind you, it's the pursuit, not the happiness itself, which is an inalienable right. This may seem a bit strange, given that many of us have long thought, and I include that myself in that, that the Declaration of Independence was telling us that we had the right to be happy. But it's the pursuit of happiness that we have a right to. I wanted this morning to just stick to the preamble, but you gotta know there are books and books and books written on the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. They're fabulous. The discussion is wonderful, and I urge you to go to the internet and read some of this. But I decided I would just stick with what's the meaning of happiness. It's changed so drastically since the Declaration, so it's hard for us to hear what the founders might have meant by the pursuit. Many think it's the pursuit of holiness or the pursuit of godliness with no interference from the state. Or it might mean the right to thrive without the government taking away from you the fruits of your labor. The crown had no authority to interfere with a man's God-given right to follow the life which he feels called to. This feels, of course, far more serious than our talk of the pursuit of happiness these days, the pursuit of pleasure or the pursuit of bliss. Well, whatever it was that our founders thought of the word happiness, I began asking myself and others, are you happy? If the pursuit of some kind of satisfaction, some kind of contentment has eluded you, are you running around searching for happiness? Well, the American dream holds that each one of us, no matter how limited we are by birth, background, or nature, can achieve whatever measure of fulfillment of life that we desire. It makes me laugh to say that. As a dog park participant said to me, isn't happiness all that matters? What a better moment in our history to recognize how thin this idea of the American dream is. If you're a straight, white, Anglo-Saxon Protestant man, like the framers of our earliest history, maybe the American dream is still true. Make America great again. Make America like it was when the assumption that white men were in charge of everything and that everyone knew their place. That's not what I think of as the pursuit of happiness or the American dream. I think that happiness is something that we make up as we go along. A state of well-being, yes, but I don't think it's something that is characterized by permanence. Wouldn't it be cool if we could probe a brain and find out where the happiness spot was, and we could map the brain to tell us where that happiness lay? We can't simply study a person's brain. It seems to me that the only accurate definition of happiness is that state of being human and feeling human that exists when an individual can say honestly, hey, I'm happy. I've read lots about people who say that happiness cannot be achieved by conscious effort. If you work for happiness, it will elude you. I think that happiness is more of a byproduct. Someone said that happiness is like a cat-like emotion. If you try to coax it, it will avoid you. But if you pay no attention to it, it will rub up against your leg and might even jump up in your lap. Perhaps much of happiness can be ours only when we relax and if we start focusing on someone else's happiness. I know that most often when I suddenly realize that I'm happy, it's in some effortless everyday moment when I have stopped striving for something. It's totally without judgment that I also say that some of us are just predisposed to being happy and some of us aren't. I would have to say of myself that until I was in my 50s, I was truly predisposed to unhappiness. I would say that I'm predisposed to a kind of wintry spirituality. I love that image, a wintry spirituality. I'm strung together to have a kind of darkness to my soul. And without being judgmental about it, I think it is important to remind ourselves that happiness is often a matter of choice. This has been a point that is made repeatedly in 12-step programs. Yet I want to be sensitive to how very different our spiritual and emotional dispositions really are. I would not go so far as Abe Lincoln did, who blithely asserted, Most people are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. I don't believe that any of us totally determines the mix of happiness and misery that make up our lives. Accidents of birth and personality and neurology, life experience, circumstance, and even luck, just luck, can powerfully shape how we feel about our lives. Any New Age suggestion that people who ever find themselves in an unhappy place are choosing to be unhappy is so much self-help garbage and quite insensitive to the complexity of our lives. Clearly, there are certain attitudes of the heart that we are free to choose, attitudes that can contribute greatly to our own measure of happiness. We can work at discovering more of it, but how do we go about ensuring a greater measure of personal happiness for ourselves? Please don't get me wrong. While money isn't everything, it sure helps. And I would be a hypocrite if I didn't acknowledge that I would be unhappy about living with less than I have. But as we know, sadly, there are many whose selfish and materialistic behavior indicates that they honestly believe that they can be made whole and happy by singularly pursuing their own personal enrichment. Politicians everywhere give lip service to this cruel and tragic illusion. It's okay, Americans who have made it don't have to pay taxes to help the poor or to educate our children. But this American inclination to believe that happiness can only be found in a kind of covetousness, this must be unmasked for the dangerous bankruptcy that it really is. For surely we all can see that when we blindly pursue our own wealth and possessions, all we are succeeded in doing is isolating ourselves from the blessings of the people around us. If we singularly devote our energies to having and taking, to our possessing, well, we then inevitably fall out of relationship with the people who are around us, with all the life that is around us. And I think we then cast ourselves into a lonely spiritual hell of purposeless possessiveness. In all my reading in the lives of Christians around the world, I see that the most enduring happiness that people talk about is at its core relational. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. Truly happy persons are the ones who have reached out to life to establish significant relationships of a kind of caring reciprocity. It is service, not selflessness, communion, not consumption, that gives us a kind of reward that we really seek. Boy, did Jesus understand the paradox of riches. Many who are first will be last, and the last will be first. It is our engagement in the context of our relationship, which in the end will make us truly rich and bring us joy. Yes, of course, this is all obvious, but yet at times it's hard to see. The happy person is the one who lives a life of love, who relates to everything in caring ways, who offers the self and who gives freely to others, who lives by the law of holy human expenditure and knows that the best way to get is to give. It's almost embarrassing to talk about it. It's so obvious. I know that this is true in my own life for sure. It is ever and always my loving reciprocal relationships which bring me the most lasting and life-saving paradox, isn't it? You must give to get. You must expend to have. You must share to possess. Happiness comes to us when we generously pour ourselves out for the happiness of others. It's simple, but it's amazing. We get happiness by pursuing the happiness of others. Another thing I have to say, some of us have really been deeply wounded by life and battered by painful circumstance, drained by ill health, exhausted by persistent personal demons. Still, to those who are unhappy and those who are not, true happiness cannot come in isolation. Happiness comes only by taking the risks of giving, the risks of serving and sharing. I know how difficult it is to think about giving when you feel that you haven't been getting much for life. It's painful to think about sharing when we are sure that we are all but depleted of personal resources. But it's the only way. I've been struggling with depression my whole adult life. For me, I stay sane this way, taking medications and doing all that I can to refuse isolation, to give something, to share something, to serve someone. Sometimes it's only my dog that I serve. And so I suggest that happiness can be successfully pursued, some not exactly in the sense that our founding fathers meant it, but it can be pursued by refusing isolation. It can be found in relationships. That's where the treasure lies. It is reported that Mormons register highest among all Americans on the happiness scale. They are definitely doing some things that promote close ties with each other. I doubt that I will ever get exactly what they have, but I do know that if we are to have happiness, we have to pour out ourselves to pave the way, the same way the Mormons do. Here's what St. Luke suggests. Give and there will be gifts for you. A full measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over. It will be poured into your lap. Because the amount you measure out is the amount you will be given back. May this joyful truth possess our souls. Amen.